This is
KUT.
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop. I used to get mad at my school. The teachers had taught me when cool. Holding me down, turning me around, filling me up with your room. I have to admit, it's getting better. A little better all the time.
Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. Welcome back to campus.
Well, thank you. I am always excited to be here. And I have to say, I'm especially excited about the topic for this episode.
Why is that?
Well, as our good topics often do, well, we get lots of good topics from listeners, I should say.
Yep.
But also, we often get good topics. They just come up in conversation when we're talking about something else.
Oh, no. These are always the ones I dread.
And I think, hey, we should talk about that in a whole separate episode. So uh-oh. I want to do that today.
Okay.
You said something in the episode just not too long ago. You were helping us enjoy calculus and making calculus fun and easy.
Mm-hmm.
And you were sort of laying out calculus in real world terms of, you know, miles per hour and rate and distance and all of that. And you posed a question and said, now that question seems hard or seems like it doesn't have an answer. So don't answer that. Answer something easier. And I thought, can you do that?
You can do anything.
Well, I thought, man, I love that strategy. And I want to hear more about the application of that in learning, because I think often when we've got a puzzle or a predicament or something in front of us, we just sort of dive headlong and go, oh my God, that's so hard, I can't do it. What is your philosophy about this approach?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I joke with my students, but I do mean this sincerely, that I tell them, if you really want to be a great mathematician, or more generally, a really great creative thinker, then when you're faced with a really, really difficult challenge, when you're faced with the ultimate difficult challenge, don't do it. Immediately,
don't do it.
Immediately, you know, give up and admit defeat, you know. And so this, you know, when the going gets tough, just leave, you know, is the mathematician or the creative thinker philosophy. Because if it's a really, really difficult challenge, the bottom line is you're not going to be able to solve it. So just move on. But instead, create easier questions. Look at simple things and try to understand the simple thing first. So immediately let that go and instead build toward it. Create a strategy through which you will realize that challenge, not by trying to bite at it immediately, but working your way up to it. If you think about the big things, whether it's in science, like in mathematics, or even in the natural sciences, I mean, like finding a cure for cancer or these kind of things. No one's going to find a cure for cancer looking directly at that thing. Instead, they're looking at smaller questions, deeper questions, and building insights. And that's a very powerful way of moving forward.
Okay, so a couple of questions then about how to go about this. How do you break something, a big question or a big puzzlement, how do you then go about breaking that down into smaller parts?
Well, it really depends upon the context. So, for example, you know, in my effective thinking and creative puzzle solving, this is one of the techniques I want them to really practice. So often I will give them a scenario, a puzzle, where just the numbers are kind of large, there's lots of people involved, or it's like a chessboard, and the chessboard is kind of a big chessboard. Well, the first thing you do is say, okay, well, I can't do that. So let's just assume that there are fewer people. Let's assume that the chessboard, instead of being an 8x8 chessboard, is a 2x2 chessboard. Just immediately create a different scenario that is parallel, where all of a sudden the solution is obvious. That's what you want to do. You want to create something that's so simple that the solution is commonsensical, and then move from the commonsensical to the abstract and to the kind of the much general, more bold thinking.
So can you walk us through an example in real life or in calculus or someplace where we can sort of see this in action?
Well, sure. I mean, certainly in calculus, it's the easiest thing for me to do because, you know, the first question of calculus, as we talked about a few episodes back, is trying to find instantaneous speed, how fast you're going at any one instant in time. And the reality is, if you remember that rate is equal to the change in distance divided by the change in time, then if you've gone no time, you've traveled no distance, and so you get zero divided by zero, which of course your head will explode if you try to actually compute that as your teachers told you. So you can't do that. So that's too hard of a question. So instead, you try to do something simpler. How fast was I going over a period of, let's say, a minute around that time? And then 30 seconds around that time. Now, in each of those cases, you can actually compute that. So a minute, that's the change in distance of a minute. And then the change in time is a minute. And the change in distance is, let's say, 3 feet. So you can say, okay, I was going 3 feet per minute and so forth. So how can you make meaning? How can you then find out what's going on at the instant? Well, you can go now 30 seconds. You can go 15 seconds. You can go 5 seconds. You can go 1 second. All those things are computable. And as you do that, you start seeing a pattern. And in that pattern lies the answer. And in calculus, that's called the limit and the derivative. But who cares? The point is, do something easier first and then inch your way up to the more challenging one.
So this sounds like something that obviously it's a great tool in calculus, or if you have something complicated you're trying to figure out in an academic setting. But it also sounds like it's a good thing to take out of the academic setting and into any host of questions that come up in life.
I would argue that with all of academics, the thinking strategies that we try to offer, in fact, are most powerfully used in our actual everyday lives. And so exactly, this idea of focusing on something simple and going deep and creating easier questions is something that will allow everything in our lives to kind of bloom and blossom in ways that are unexpected and richer than we ever could imagine. Absolutely. Everyone's got to try this.
So I think I tried that strategy with the puzzler.
Yes.
But I'm not sure that I quite got there. But remind us of the puzzler.
Let me remind you.
A huge fan of it.
Exactly. I wanted to start off by saying I want to remind everyone that I do not like this puzzler. So I'm doing this against my better judgment.
Yes, this is under protest.
Well, so in a very weird, far-off universe, it turns out that half of 5 equals 3.
Which is not mathematically.
Which I don't like.
Arithmetically, that is not
I'm from
true.
This universe, Jennifer.
Right.
Even though I look the way I do, I am from this universe. And but if we assume that half of 5 is 3, the question is, given that, what is 1/3 of 10? That's the question. Now, if you don't get this one right, good for you.
Good for me.
But I don't know. Maybe you can.
Anybody.
You have it?
Well, let me tell you how I started.
Good. Tell me your thinking.
What I did was I looked at it and thought, well, as you said, half of 5 is not 3. So we're working from some odd place to begin with. But I said, well, what do I know about this that I think is true?
Okay.
2 times 5 is 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of started playing around with that idea.
Good.
And I don't know if it got me anywhere.
Well, but I think that's actually a great insight. That's a great insight.
And so I started doubling things and I said, well, I know that 2 times 3 is 6.
Right.
And if maybe then 6 in this universe is 2/3 of 10, would 2 be 1/3 of that? I just started playing around with numbers. So my answer that I'm tossing out there, my first answer I'm tossing out there is 2.
Okay. Well, I like the answer. I like the thinking even more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to now vamp off of your thinking, because
okay,
I like what you said.
Good.
So the first thing you said was, if half of 5 equals 3, that means if I double both sides, then I'd see that 5 would equal 6.
Whoa, hold on.
you said you double both sides. So if half of 5 is 3, then 5 would have to be 6.
I see. Right. Because half of it is 3.
Right.
I got you.
Okay. So now if 5 is equal to 6, if we double that again, then we see that 10 is actually equal to
12.
12. Exactly. And so if we want 1/3 of 10, it's the same thing as 1/3 of 12, which is 4. That's it. So you were close with 2, but I had
half of the answer that I needed.
So that, in fact, the way that you were thinking through it is exactly the way that I thought through it. So let me now show you a different way. Where we can kind of see the same thing. And
uh-huh.
I didn't think of it this until after we wrote it down. But one thing we can do is if half of 5 is 10, if half of 5 is 3,
uh-huh,
let's just see if we can get to 10 right away. We just multiply both sides by 4. So if we multiply both sides by 4, then I've got 4 times a half of 5.
4 times 3.
So 4 times a half of 5 is actually 10, because 4 divided by the 2.
Oh, the real half of 5.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, so
on the one half, we're getting 10. And on the other half, 4 times 4 times 3 is 12. So we immediately get to the 12, and therefore we take a third and we get to 4.
So what I really like about that one is you took the problem that existed not in the real world, that situation, and you brought it into the real world and said, okay, I'm going to deal with the real world numbers first.
Exactly. Well, because on one hand, you got real world numbers, on the other hand, you don't, and that's the reason why I don't like this puzzler. But it's kind of it's one of these things where if you accept a falsehood, then where does that also lead you? So, I mean, if half of 5 does equal 3, then it turns out that a third of 10 does equal 4. Right. Those are consistently wrong statements.
And wrong is not necessarily bad. It's just how you get to it.
In this case, it's bad.
In this case, it's bad.
But in general, that's right.
In this case, it's bad.
Right.
Well, just to wrap up this idea about sort of breaking something that's very difficult down into smaller, manageable, digestible bites. I don't want to go out on a limb here, but I would dare say that this makes some of these challenging things actually, dare I say it, fun.
Well, everything should be fun. I mean, every intellectual pursuit, every time we're trying to understand the world in a richer way, every time we're trying to make meaning of something that seems mysterious, that journey and the process involved should be joyful. Learning and growth should be joyful. Even if where we end up is a place that we don't like, or that is foreign to us, or that scares us, the journey, if in its purest form, if it's taking us to new discoveries and new understanding, we have to find that process joyful, even if the end result might be kind of scary.
Well, Ed, thank you for always helping to bring joy to us. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. You can also keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT News.